From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. As August marks National Child Support Awareness Month, we explore the economic and social conditions of kids in Florida. WalletHub.com's 2015 Best and Worst States for Underprivileged Children report ranks Florida 45th in the nation overall, considering a variety of factors from access to health care to food insecurity. We'll take a closer look at the findings. Plus, a recent independent report from Florida's Auditor General cites concerns over the security of Florida's voter registration database. Will Florida be ready for the 2016 elections? And as the Federal Voting Rights Act turns 50, we'll explore the history of the civil rights law in the Sunshine State. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. As we're all aware, the 2016 presidential election campaigning is in full swing, but what about the process of carrying out the election itself? A recent independent report by the Florida Auditor General into the state's voting system last month criticizes the Department of State over security concerns with Florida's 9-year-old voter registration database and questions whether the state will be ready for the 2016 presidential election. For the remainder of the hour, we'll be exploring what voting officials are doing to prepare and to reduce the risk of a security breach. Plus, August 6th marked the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Federal Voting Rights Act, which was designed to protect voters from racially discriminatory laws. We'll also be taking a look at the civil rights law's history and impact here in Florida. Joining me now is Brian Corley. He's president of the Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections, and he's also the supervisor of elections for Pasco County. Brian Corley, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Also on the line is president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, Pamela Goodman. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
And also with us in studio is Florida Gulf Coast University political science professor and frequent guest of the program, Dr. Peter Bergerson. Great to have you back.
Well, great to be here, John.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Connect with our guests with your phone calls to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments or questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. Brian Corley, I wanted to begin with you. When it comes to these security concerns cited in the Florida Inspector General's report, is this concern over the database potentially being hacked, or is it more about lax enforcement of who in the Department of State's office should even have access to it? Or both?
There was a multitude or a myriad of issues addressed by the Auditor General's report, but the good news is this. I've had some folks express concern to me over how FDRS will be operational during what can best be described as a possible historic turnout election in 16. And my colleagues and I, the supervisors, are the only ones who can add or remove voters, and certainly the ones that tabulate the votes. So each of the 67 counties are the elections administrators, not Tallahassee. So, we have some concerns about the operation of the Florida voter registration system. For several years, we voiced our concerns, and police report that through sort of behind-the-scenes lobbying, the Department of State has done a complete upgrade or refresh of their hardware. Of course, for your listeners, the hardware for us non-techie people are the nuts and the bolts that make it operational. So while the report was troubling, we had some issues with a lack of transparency and relaying of information from the secretary, we've had since some very positive subsequent meetings. So, again, the report was personally troubling to me as election administrator, but that hardware upgrade and subsequent software refresh will go a long way towards making 2016 hopefully very, very smooth from an elections administration standpoint.
Do you expect to have more communication with Secretary of State Ken Detzner moving forward now than perhaps you've had in the past?
Yes, I do believe. In fact, one of the real issues we had is as the new president, the 1 year term, and I had asked for a meeting with the secretary. We actually have 3 supervisors who are dedicated to overseeing FDRS as a liaison from the association. So we met with the secretary in July, and it was very troubling because of that meeting. The whole purpose of the meeting was better communication from the state to us on the county level. And as it related to FDRS and the issues it was having. And during that meeting, it was never, ever mentioned about that the secretary had replied to the Auditor General's report or even a reference of the existence of that report. So we kind of fired off a letter to the governor and to him, and was picked up by some media around the state. And to the secretary's credit, since that time, he admitted he needed to have better communication, has pledged to do so. So I'm optimistic that we will have considerably better communication from the state to the supervisors for 16.
And just generally, why is it so important to keep the voter registration database secure? What kind of information is contained in that database that needs to be protected?
Well, we all go back, we think back to the 2000 election in Florida, and one of the great things that came out of that election, and I say that respectfully, without sarcasm, was the Help America Vote Act, which, one of the many important things was, instead of each individual county having their own database, it created a single uniform database, such that each state has its own. Obviously, Florida is the Florida voter registration system. So I can access, as a supervisor, if a voter shows up on election day, I can see that they're already registered, and maybe move them into my county from Miami-Dade or from Pensacola and from anywhere in between. It provides integrity and, quite frankly, smoother elections administration. So it's very important. The old adage, you only have 1 day to get it right. Of course, it's a little bit longer with early voting and absentee voting, but it's just too important not to get it right. So obviously the data that's contained in that system is wholly important to elections administration.
And there was also concern cited in the Inspector General's report over the database shutting down. That report finds the database shut down 8 times between December of last year and February of this year. One of those shutdowns actually lasted 3 weeks and actually resulted in a Delray Beach City Council candidate not being able to run because the county elections office couldn't verify the signatures of voters in his candidate forms. Have those breakdowns impacted your work as the Pasco County Supervisor of Elections? Is that something that happens?
When FDRS is down, it impacts every county because, a lot of people think, hey, there's, elections every other year and city elections every year. Well, there's a lot of things that we do on a day-to-day basis that's not as glamorous or as sexy as Election Day. Every single day in every county, there are hundreds, sometimes thousands, depending on the size of the county, of voters who are becoming new voters, who are updating their address or signature, name, a myriad of issues. Well, when FDRS is down, we can't process that on the statewide system. So that was probably the biggest issue we had and the concerns we relayed over the past several years, because it was crashing more frequent intervals. And I'm pleased to report, since the upgrade, it's been running very, very smooth. It's been about approximately 2.5 weeks, but in that time it's been running very, very smooth, and we have every reason to believe that will continue.
We're exploring concerns over the security of Florida's voter registration database that recently came to light through an independent state inspector general report. We're speaking with the president of the Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections, Brian Corley, Florida League of Women Voters president, Pamela Goodman, and FGCU political science professor, Dr. Peter Bergerson. I invite listeners to connect with our guests and join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Pamela Goodman, what's the reaction from the League of Women Voters regarding this State Inspector General report?
Well, thank you. And Brian, you and I have not had the chance to meet in person. I look forward to that, but I am so pleased with everything that you just reported, because everyone should really understand our supervisor of elections are our boots on the ground, and their job is incredibly, incredibly complex and incredibly detailed, and they need every system more than 100%, 150% up and running as we approach certainly any election, but certainly the presidential election in 2016. So I'm pleased to hear that the communication has improved. The league was concerned that, once again, being totally supportive of our supervisor elections, we were concerned that perhaps they weren't having a seat at the table following this audit to give input, that they weren't getting the support that they really needed, and that there was not a good back-and-forth communication between all of those, as I said, very extremely important boots-on-the-ground entities and our Secretary of State. So I'm very pleased to hear Supervisor Corley's report and hope that it continues. The people of Florida deserve nothing but the best in fair, accessible, and credible elections, and hopefully that's where we're headed for 2016.
Right. And, you know, even beyond taking measures to make sure that the voter registration database is secure and that all these issues brought up by the Inspector General are addressed, are you concerned about potential issues regarding public perception? You know, in the last presidential election, I was among the many voters in Florida who waited in line for several hours to cast a ballot. You know, then in 2013, supervisors of elections kind of butted head with Secretary of State Detzner over efforts to purge non-citizens from the voter rolls. And then, of course, there's the 2000 presidential election, which we don't need to get into. But when it comes to the voting process in Florida, do we have a public perception problem that might just motivate some people to stay home on Election Day?
Well, we certainly hope not. I mean, we're doing, with the Supervisor of Elections and organizations like mine, we're doing everything to help educate the voters on all of the different ways that we can vote in Florida. And certainly, as long as we continue to work on expanding early voting locations, making accessible ballots more accessible, like absentee ballots, shoring up that process, making voter registration more accessible and an easier thing to do. And I want to commend our legislature. Just this last session, they actually passed, and along with the supervisors, thank you, Brian, working very, very hard in that piece of legislation to approve online voter registration. We won't have that until 2017. This will be passed this presidential election, but online voter registration going forward in Florida, that was a huge, huge step towards accessibility and ease of voter registration in Florida. So as long as we continue to work on those areas of accessibility and credibility, I think that the voters will have the confidence. But it's all about, you know, the voting locations, expanded early voting, and the accessibility to the ballot box.
All right. Well, Brian, as Pamela has articulated, it's far from all bad. She highlighted those successes in recent years, you know, particularly when it comes to expanding access through early voting opportunities. I know it's not really a brand new issue, but can you tell us a bit about that? Has that actually resulted in greater voter participation?
Well, yeah, clearly it has. It's had an impact. And I think that Florida, you know, some things we've done as elections administrators, you know, deservingly give us a black eye, and I mean that respectfully to myself and my colleagues. However, you know, when it comes to, as Pamela correctly pointed out, you know, the presidential election coming up next year, is there's such an intense microscope, and, you know, why is there always such intense scrutiny on Florida? And maybe Dr. Bergeson could speak to this, but, you know, clearly when you look at the electoral votes with California, Texas, New York, then Florida, we are the first true swing state. Clearly, California, Texas, and New York, it's decided well before Election Day. And, you know, my beloved birth state of New York doesn't even have early voting, doesn't have no excuse absentee voting. So what we asked for, and Pamela, thanks for the shout-out to the supervisors, because in 13, after the 2012 elections, we lobbied pretty aggressively for flexibility. One size doesn't fit all. You know, we advocated what Miami-Dade needs for early voting is not the same as what Putnam County or Franklin County needs, and greater flexibility in locations of early voting. So we got all that. We've been heavily promoting a good chunk of the state the convenience of vote by mail, being able to vote from your coffee table and ensuring that ballot gets back to us and is counted. So the convenience factor with vote by mail, early voting, with weekend evening hours, flexible locations, and of course the traditional election day, there's really no impediment to say that you weren't able to have your voice heard at the ballot box, quite honestly. So I think we're from elections administrators. I think we're in a good posture, to be honest with you. Like we like to say, all we ask is that let the winners win big to avoid a recount. That's all we ask for, respectfully.
Right. Well, Dr. Bergerson, would you like to weigh in there? I mean, can we really understate the importance of Florida in presidential elections?
Absolutely not. I think Brian was correct that Florida is, with the 29 Electoral College votes, is the real key to the path to the White House. And it's not only is it up for grabs, it past elections, in addition, have been decided by just less than 2 or 3% of the vote. And so the winning candidate or the losing candidate in one case lost by 530-some votes. 2 years ago, it was 2 or 3%. So there's no question that the spotlight is on Florida and the accuracy of Florida. And particularly, we have two major candidates from the state of Florida and a total of four that live here in Florida now who are running for office. Mm-hmm. And so that provides an additional national exposure.
All right. Well, we've been discussing recent security concerns regarding Florida's voter registration database, and now we'll turn our attention to Florida and the Voting Rights Act, as the federal civil rights law recently celebrated its 50th anniversary. Again, we're talking with political science professor Dr. Peter Bergerson, Pasco County Supervisor of Elections Brian Corley, and League of Women Voters of Florida President Pamela Goodman. Listeners can join the conversation with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And as we just mentioned, August 6th, Voting Rights Act turned 50. What did passage of that law mean, you know, really in terms of successes for the civil rights movement? That was kind of the pinnacle of...
Well, it's unmeasurable or unlimited unmeasurable. I don't think that we would have seen, for instance, the election of Jimmy Carter or perhaps Bill Clinton without the Voting Rights Act. For sure, we would not have seen the election of Barack Obama. Let me just give you some, particularly here in Florida. Mm-hmm. In 1961, the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights found that just a little over 84% of the voters in Florida were white, yet they accounted for almost 91% of those people who voted. In two counties in Florida, there were no black registration voters, even though in one county over 15% was black, or and the other nearly 12% of the population was black. So leading up to the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act of 65, you can see the need for, at least at that time, that was 50 years ago. Things have obviously changed. They've obviously changed for the better, as been pointed out by Pam and Brian. But the Supreme Court last year really threw a monkey wrench into the Voting Rights Act. And unfortunately, Florida has had a history of overt discrimination towards the minorities. And interestingly, Florida also has the Voting Rights Act, as amended in 1975, has a provision for language minorities, which perhaps is not as well known as the voting rights for African Americans.
Yeah, I had heard of instances in past elections where information on voting and where to go was printed in English on one side and then on Spanish on the other side, but that the language, like what was in the Spanish, was actually incorrect, like sending people to the wrong place or on the wrong day.
Yeah, well, perhaps Brian can address that. I don't think it applies. The Voting Rights Act does not apply to his county as supervisors of elections, but it does apply to five counties that are associated here in southwest Florida: Collier, Hardy, Hendry, Hillsborough, and Monroe County. They were under what is known as a pre-clearance provision. And perhaps Brian can address that.
Please. Go ahead.
I'd love to. Thank you, Dr. Bergeron. You're right. The five preclearance counties, you know, when we think of preclearance, it's a requirement from the Federal Department of Justice to really any change you make, whether it be precinct lines, polling place changes, et cetera. But it's important to point out, because clearly the Voting Rights Act came out as you correctly, and it's a sad history in our country's, a chapter in our country's history of overt discrimination, literacy tests, poll taxes, et cetera. But those five counties are simply language-based. That was the pre-clearance issue. It wasn't like we've seen in other states, although that doesn't mean I'm not alleging discrimination ever took place, just from a legalese perspective. So, you know, we've come a long way as far as elections go. Again, there's things that, you know, we all love America. I love this country as much as anyone. There's things, you know, my grandparents came off the boat from Ireland and faced rampant discrimination. So we've seen some sad chapters, but I think we've come a long way since that time. And particularly in Florida, you know, groups such as the League of Women Voters, other advocacy groups, and as Pamela correctly pointed out, the in the trenches, the supervisors, we've taken a very active role in about the past decade plus of truly, truly advocating. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, there was no greater advocate in the supervisor elections. It's ironic that our job, the title, is at the epicenter of elections and whatnot, but it's the most politically agnostic, nonpartisan job there is, and it needs to be that way, and it is. So there's no greater advocate than a supervisor. We want everyone who's eligible to register. We're out there in the community registering voters. We'll be able to do it online soon. We notice every voter with sample ballots with options available. We do, most of us do PSAs on radio and television. So we do what we can. Our goal is to get 100% of those that are eligible registered and get 100% turnout. That's our very transparent agenda. But I think, you know, we've come a long way, and I think I'm proud of some of the stuff we've done. And I think there's just no excuse for someone not taking advantage of voting in Florida and our country.
I think two of the areas where there has been some questioning regarding the impediment towards voting have been in the redistricting of state legislative districts, both the Florida House, Florida Senate, as well as congressional seats. There's where there's been a question of whether gerrymandering and legislators have pick their voters as opposed to the voters picking their legislators, and subsequently the minority communities have either they've been broken in half or their influence has been diluted by this process. In fact, that's where most of the contentious in the application of the Voting Rights Act. And you also, the other is the purging of voters. The argument that there's been a lot of election fraud and people who have been registered that shouldn't. Really, it's really been a very, very small number. But that argument was used at the statewide level to restrict voting.
Right. Let's take a call from Pamela, go ahead.
Just one comment. I don't think that we can be remiss, though, in the Supreme Court decision 2 years ago, the Shelby versus Holder case, which really gutted key provisions of the Voting Rights Act. And the only body of government right now that can repair that damage is Congress, and they have done nothing to do that. So beyond Florida, we continue to see, I mean, and we're reading about it now across the country, voter discrimination at the ballot boxes is becoming more pronounced, and it needs watchdogging from strong supervisor of elections, from organizations like the League of Women Voters, from academia, from our journalists, to really restore the VRA to what it was, keeping our elections as free and fair and accessible as they possibly can be. So I don't think we can be too remiss in what did change a couple of years ago, and keep our eyes open and hope that Congress does put some standards back into place that will instill and continue to instill those VRA rights.
All right. Well, we have just about a minute or two left. So Don from Venice is on the line here. I'm sorry. We're not going to have time to get to your call, but he's asking, how can I find out the percentage of potential voters who actually voted? I know in Florida we have nearly 12 million registered voters here. Typically, during presidential election years, I would imagine we have a much higher turnout.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. And then perhaps Brian would have the exact numbers, but there's at least a 30% fall off in non-presidential years. Let me just address real quickly what Pam talked about. What the Supreme Court did in the Holder case was that they said that the formula that was used to measure those who were denied or access to registration or voting were outdated. And that's why they threw the legislation out or declared it unconstitutional.
Right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. But thank you so much to my guests, Brian Corley, Pamela Goodman, and Peter Bergerson. Great to speak with you all.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks.
Brian Corley is president of the Florida State Association of Supervisors of Elections and the supervisor of elections in Pasco County. Pamela Goodman is president of the League of Women Voters of Florida. And Dr. Peter Bergerson is a political science professor here at Florida Gulf Coast University. There's more information on the show, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers, Luke Martin and Richard Cinqui. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco 91.7 FM.